thank you guys for joining us on this month's Member Solutions Teleconference. My name is Melody Schumann, and I'll be your host today. The topic of discussion, as I mentioned previously, is one of my most passionate reports that I've written for Member Solutions so far. The topic is 7 factors that have improved my teaching ability. Now, when I wrote this report, I wrote it because we've had several Member Solutions clients who booked 20-minute consultations, and I seem to get a lot of people who question ways and ideas to help not only them but their staff become better instructors on the mat. And for me, that's probably one of my favorite topics of discussion is teaching, because I'm one of those inside-out schools, where I think that the core of the success of a school is measured by how well your curriculum is, which means that your teaching has to be on point. So when I wrote this report, usually a report takes me about half a week to write, maybe 3 to 4 days. This report actually took me 2 weeks to really get down to the core factors that I find personally have made me an extremely happy instructor. As you guys know, a lot of you guys know that I used to own and operate a chain of successful schools in South Florida, and I hit a burnout point fairly quickly when, before I even turned 25, I was almost ready and contemplating switching careers. And I think one of the reasons why is because I lost my passion for teaching. And I lost my passion for teaching because I wasn't trying to improve my teaching abilities. I was actually going backwards. And that kind of really made it hard for me to stay in the martial arts industry. I think that's why I actually became a martial arts consultant, because it was something that I've always grown up with, is martial arts. And I didn't want to leave it, but at the same time, I wanted to be happy. So again, when I wrote this report, I put a lot of time and effort into it. I was really satisfied with the content, so I used it in my instructor certification here that we hosted at my school in April. And the instructors who participated found these factors to be extremely important. They all went back and applied the information that they got at the certification, and I've been getting some great feedback. As a matter of fact, we had a celebrity martial artist who taught some special classes at our school, and he and his staff also participated in our instructor certification. His name is Jason David Frank. And if you don't know him, he was part of the Power Rangers and part of the Dino Thunder movie. He has a very successful chain of schools. His main school is in Texas. And after he came to our instructor certification, he was so blown away by our students that he's actually going to shift around his curriculum and shift around some of the content that he teaches in his school and his teaching approach. One thing that he did say about our students, which I was extremely flattered by, is he said that we had the most well-behaved students, the most well-mannered, but most importantly, he said, out of all the schools that he's taught in, and he's taught in over 100 schools all around the world, including Australia and including the UK and so forth, he said that our students were the most teachable. And what that means is when he was running his special classes for our students, he said that he could pretty much teach them anything and everything, and that not only would they pick up on it, but they would thoroughly enjoy it. He said usually when he's teaching at other schools, he can maintain the attention of all the students, but he really, really doesn't always see every single student learning and growing, because some of them get kind of caught in the mix-up of the class. Maybe some of the material is too difficult or too comprehensive for them. But he said not one student he found struggled with the curriculum that he taught. And to me, that's very, very flattering. But one thing that I found was very important, and one reason why our students are very teachable, I think, is in our teaching approach. I cannot do the fancy, flashy kicks like I used to be able to do. And I definitely do not have the talents and skills to the caliber of some of those fantastic martial artists such as Roland Osborne and Ernie Reyes Jr. So the fact that he said our students were some of the best was, again, like I said, very flattering. And I think I contributed to these 7 teaching factors that are here in the report. So let's go ahead and get started. First and foremost, of course, I want to point out that having great students is not necessarily magic. You do not need to be a fantastic, famous, internationally recognized martial arts instructor in order to have a successful school with students that are trainable and students that possess a lot of talent and abilities. It's all about on how you deliver the teaching that makes a significant difference. Whether you're young, you're old, you're quick, you're slow, none of that stuff really matters. It all matters on your approach, and that's, again, what I want to talk about today. So let's go ahead and get started on the first teaching factor. I've spent a great deal of time analyzing my teaching efforts so that I can hone in on my skills. That's the first factor that I find is important to becoming a great instructor. And what I mean by that is I don't teach dull drills in my school. For a long time, I did. We had all kinds of buffer drills, and I would just try to get through different drills just because those are the drills that I was taught when I was younger, and of course, those are the drills that help pass time. Now when I teach, if a drill is dull, or if I see that some of my students are going backwards or maybe not progressing, I don't teach that drill anymore. Every single thing that I do while I'm on the mat, I pay attention to, and I try to hone in on what things work and what things don't work. Just to give you an example, as I provided in a report, on balance day, I pulled out a whole bunch of agility rings and lined them up one in front of the other, and I had the students take turns hopping on one foot through each ring. Well, I noticed even with my intermediate and advanced 5- and 6-year-olds who can do anywhere between 25 and 50 kicks easily without putting their foot down, they were still having a hard time hopping through the rings on one foot. And I think one of the reasons why was just on how I taught it. Just having them sit down and say, okay, what you're going to do is take turns and hop through each ring on one foot all the way down through all 8 rings and then go to the end of the line. That was not enough to get them to actually build the balance and build the ability to go through the agility rings like I wanted them to. So the second time I did the agility rings, I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to practice having balance, being able to hop on one leg and also move forward. And you're going to feel like you want to fall. And if you have good balance, what you want to do is keep your legs strong, your stomach strong, and keep your head up. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hold your hand and help you jump through the rings. Now, if you feel that holding my hand is too easy, then you can let go of my hand and jump through the rings on your own. Well, when I did that, I held each student's hand the first time through. The second time through, I was amazed. More than half of the students were able to jump through the rings without me holding their hand the second time through, whereas on the first time I actually did that drill, hardly any of the students can jump through all 8 rings. So it's all in your approach and your delivery on how you explain the drill and how you motivate the students to do the drill that makes a big difference. Me saying I'm going to hold your hand, and then if you can do it without me holding your hand, really challenges them a little bit more, gets them to put a little bit more focus and effort and energy into that drill. So keep that in mind. That's a very important factor. Going on to factor number 2, I personally choose to teach the way I do because I taught a different way for several years, and I eventually became burnt out. Giving the push-ups and the timeouts was something that I was a firm believer in and a firm supporter in. If your students were not paying attention, it was unacceptable, and they would either get push-ups, or if you've been giving them push-ups and they're still not listening, then I put them in timeout. And I know that putting students in timeout will embarrass them and embarrass the parents. And in the past, I thought that that's what they needed in order to follow directions. Nowadays, I wouldn't do that anymore in my school because I don't want to embarrass the student and I don't want to embarrass the parent. I think that right now in my particular environment, if I embarrass a student by putting them in timeout and, of course, also embarrass the parent, that's going to be retroactive to the student's growth and development. I'm spending a lot more time using different kind of teaching approaches that make a big difference. For example, when I do my drills, I always sit them down and I do a mat chat about the drill and give them a thorough explanation, and then we actually run through the actual drill. And in between every 2 drills, I give them a water break. That gives them an opportunity to come back down a little bit or relax a little bit and unwind a little bit instead of having to sit still and sit straight the whole time during class. Kind of like the smart zone, safe zone theory that I used to use when I taught the little ninja program. While the kids are actually going to get a drink of water, I'm not trying to make sure that they stay in a straight line and not talk by the water fountain. And even when they jump back on the mat, whether they're sitting in a circle or sitting down near my mat chat or I have them line up, I'm not necessarily trying to force them to sit still and stand still at that time. That's kind of their downtime. So if they run back on the mat and they slide when they sit down in the mat chat, I'm not yelling at them like I used to. If they're talking, that's okay too. Basically what I'm doing is I'm trying to get them in a routine to collectively bring them back to a discipline order in another approach. And that approach is once everybody comes back from their water break or once we're done with one particular drill, we're cleaning up and we're starting the next drill, I always challenge them by having them line up as fast as they can. I'll count down the 5. If they all don't line up as fast as they can, then I'll make them do it over again. And I'm also using certain things such as sitting down with your legs crossed, hands on your knees, and I do that a lot. So while I'm running a drill, if I see my students wiggling around and moving around, I'll always tell them, sit down, legs crossed, hands on your knees. We can't move on until everybody's sitting still. That way, if one student isn't paying attention, but they see all the other students paying attention, then it'll bring them back a little bit more to order. I also try to challenge my students a little bit more. Instead of forcing them to stand at attention during the drill, I'll say, I'm going to challenge you guys. If you guys can stand still, feet together, hands by your side, while you're standing in line when we do this drill, then we'll play an extra minute of dodgeball at the end of class. That seems to work really well, too. Instead of telling them they have to stand still, I'm rewarding them for their efforts. So that's very important. Going on to factor number three, my daily teaching regimen begins with my goals for the curriculum. So I spend a great deal of time each class creating class planners with a strong focus on results. In other words, I don't wing it anymore. Absolutely no way whatsoever. Every single one of our class planners is designed for the students that are in their class. Now, it does help if you have students assigned to classes and if you have a mandatory attendance policy, because then you know what to expect. You should expect each and every student to be there each class, and you know which kids are going to be in that particular class, so you can create drills that you think are appropriate for their specific skills and abilities. So when I create my class planners, I'm thinking about all the students that are in that class and what kind of skills they have and what kind of skills I would like to build in them for each particular skill strength requirement. And then I teach it with results in mind. This is very important if you want to be a very effective instructor. You don't want to wing it. You want to make sure that you have goals for each class. If you have goals for each class, your class will be far more successful. We pride ourselves on saying that every single one of our class is results-driven, which means that every single student in that class will get better that particular class. And it does work. It does make a big difference. I think our students are a very good product of this teaching factor. Let's go ahead on to teaching factor number four. I've learned to master patience while maintaining energy and establishing discipline. This goes according to the same thing as factor number two, where I talk about I choose to teach the way I do because I taught a different way for several years and I got burnt out. Well, same thing with number four. I've learned to master patience while maintaining energy by using those kind of tricks and skills, such as if a child or a couple of students are getting rowdy during a certain drill, then I'll have them all sit down really quick, legs crossed, hands on their knees, and I'll say, what's the appropriate behavior during this drill? And I'll have the students take turns raising their hand, answering that question. And I like to repeat myself. I think repetition is important. That's what makes the students better. So my students will say, you got to sit, legs crossed, hands on your knees, and your chin up. And I'll say, very good. And then I'll make them sit there for 10 seconds without moving. I think that masters patience because it helps the students who maybe aren't behaving accordingly look around and see all the other kids listening, and it brings them back down to a more disciplined level. At the same time, I like to maintain energy while I'm doing things like that. So I'll have them all go run and sit at the back of the class, and then I'll say, okay, you guys, you got 3 seconds to line up this time. And I'll make them run and line up as fast as they can, and I'll even try to trick them by saying, wait till I say go. So on your mark, get set, don't go. Or my new word is ghost because it sounds just like go. And I like to try to trick them. So it makes everybody laugh. It's still a little bit silly, but at the same time, my goal is to establish good discipline as a team by being patient. And that works much better than yelling at one student. So again, like I said, if you're running a drill and your students are getting a little bit rowdy, stop. Look at them patiently. Because my students know that disorder is not the best way to run a drill or not the best way to be a good karate kid. So when I look at them, they know that I'm disappointed. Then I tell them all to sit down, legs crossed, hands on their knees, no moving. I'll walk around and look at each one of them in their eyes. And I think that that works much better than yelling at a particular student. So keep that in mind. Try to have patience with your students, but at the same time, you also have to maintain a high level of energy, and that establishes very good discipline. Going on to factor number five. This is probably one of my most passionate factors, is I establish a personal relationship with each and every student. This is highly, highly effective. The more you know your students, the more they're going to be committed to you, and the higher your retention rate is going to be. We don't lose students, knock on wood, because they don't want to be at our school anymore. We lose students for various reasons. This particular area, we have a lot of people who are moving over to the North Tampa side because the property value there is a lot more inexpensive than it is here in St. Petersburg. So we lose students because they move or because of other reasons that are beyond our control, but not because they don't want to be there anymore. And one of the reasons why we don't lose students because they don't want to be there anymore is because they all do, and they do want to be there because they have great relationships with me, with Ms. Jill, who is our director of operations, with Mr. Carlos, who is my head instructor. We really know each other on a very personal level, and it makes a big difference because then I'm more passionate about helping each individual student. So here's a couple of ideas on how I establish a personal relationship with each and every one of my students. For starters, I personally pre-evaluate each and every student before I allow him or her to participate in our group class. That is very important to me. I'm not saying that this is a mandatory policy for every single school to do, but for me, I want to know what the student's strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and I'm going to spot potential problems before I put them on the mat with all the other students that I have strong relationships with. The pre-evaluation enables me to identify the student's strengths, like I said, and it also allows me to discover how I can help him or her specifically. This is very important. I like doing the pre-evaluations because I like seeing what they're good at, and I like knowing what I can help them on. It's just a really quick example. I pre-evaluated a 5-year-old on Friday. He's actually a friend of mine's kid. His father's a professional baseball player, so it was interesting that I expected him to be highly athletic, which was totally the opposite. When I ran him through his pre-evaluation, he was very uncoordinated. He couldn't do jumping jacks. He couldn't do left and right breaking in the lateral plane. He didn't have a lot of control. He was sliding all over the mat. But at the same time, he was highly intelligent. He had a great personality. And emotionally, he's not threatened or intimidated or shy or anything like that. He's very, very confident. So when I explained to Christy, who is his mom, that he's going to gain the most from our school by building more coordination and by gaining a lot of control, his mother really appreciated it. And he started class on Monday for the first time. And when I taught class, I was looking at Logan, this new kid, knowing that he's highly intelligent, he's got great social skills, and he's got a very good emotional stability about him. But I knew that he needed a little bit of control and a little bit of coordination. So when I was running through the drills, I was making sure that I was focusing on highlighting how smart he was, but at the same time helping him build coordination and also helping him build control when we're sitting down for our mat chats. That, to me, reminds me of how highly effective I am as an instructor and, again, establishes so much value for our program. After class on Monday, his father, like who I said is a professional baseball player, complimented how well we taught the class and how organized everything was. And he also assistant coaches on the off season, and he said that he's never seen so many kids that young be very well controlled and be very well motivated. And to me, again, that's a great compliment. So understanding what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are really makes me a more effective instructor. Of course, also, knowing the students on a personal level makes them want to learn from you. So every single class or every single day when those students walk through the door, I make it a point to greet every single one of my students and also their parents, their siblings, whoever else comes in, their special guests, their family members. I make sure I say hello to them. Before I start class, I talk to each and every student, ask them how their day was, ask them if they're ready to have a good time. And when they leave, I always make it a point to say goodbye to as many students as I possibly can before they slip out the door. As a matter of fact, now it gets to the point where students won't walk out the door until they say goodbye to me, which to me shows that routine of saying hello and saying goodbye carries over to them as well. So now they don't want to leave without saying goodbye. And, of course, the same thing. If I'm in my office on a telephone call when my students walk in, sometimes they'll line up by the door, wait for me by the door. And it's really cute, but it shows me, again, that relationships can go a long way with your retention and also a long way with the results that you have in your classroom. So if any factor is very important, not just for you but also for your staff, it's to establish a personal relationship with each and every one of those students and treat them with really good respect, because I treat each and every one of my students with the highest respect I possibly can. I call each student by name. I say, yes, sir. I say, yes, ma'am. Not one student is more special than the other student. As a matter of fact, the students that have the most problem maintaining control and discipline in class are the students that I try to establish the strongest relationships with, because I know that relationships will help them become a better student. So again, if you have a highlighter, I would highlight that factor. Moving on to factor number 6. I have a high standard for each and every student's growth and development. Just like I mentioned in factor 3, my main goal is results every single day. My main goal for my students is to see them each get better. I teach results-driven classes, and this is a word that I use in my enrollment process. I use it when I'm talking to people on the phone. I even use it when I'm talking to parents after they've enrolled, and they're complimenting how great our classes are, how well their students are progressing or their child is progressing. I always say it's because we teach results-driven classes. Every single class, every single student has to get better, and if they don't get better, we identify why. Either it's the drill, or maybe the drill was too hard, maybe the drill was too easy, maybe the drill was just totally insignificant, and we remove those drills and add ones in that we think are going to generate results. My students know and understand what I expect from them in each and every class because I take the skill, I sit them down after the calisthenics, I do a mat chat on the skill, and I talk about the methods that we're going to apply in the class, and then during each particular drill, I'm reinforcing those methods that I said in the mat chat. Then when we're done with all the drills, I sit them back down and I ask them again, what did we learn today? How did we get better? And it helps them answer their own questions or answer their own success. They pointed out, we focused with our ears today. How did we focus with our ears? Because we did bag tag. We focused with our eyes. How did we focus with our eyes? Because we were hitting targets in the air. We focused with our body. How did we focus with our body today? Because we were dodging targets and not getting hit. And I like them to repeat these particular skills. It helps them get a little bit better, too, because each drill has a specific goal. So results-driven classes are very important. Now, again, like I said, I have high standards for each and every student's growth and development. So if they are showing any kind of struggle with any particular skill, which is very common for students, particularly in the intermediate and advanced levels of the programs, I approach the parents and say, it may be time for Joshua to have a private lesson. He's struggling with his balance. He's up to 35 kicks for his testing requirement. He can get to 35 kicks, but he's bouncing all over the place. And what we want to do is we want him to be able to keep his balance foot on the ground without hopping around and do those 35 kicks. That's what I'm going to be looking for at testing. Right now, if I was going to score him on a scale of 1 to 5, he would get a 2. We need to get him to at least a 3 in order for him to pass to the next level. I'm using these kind of specifics with the parents, and it makes a big difference. As a matter of fact, today is May 9th. Our next testing is on June 2nd. I am already overbooked on private lessons. I do not have any more room for private lessons between now and testing because either I'm approaching the parents and the students and saying, you need to book a private lesson that's going to help you get a better score at testing. It's going to make a big difference in your performance. Or the parents are noticing it before I even can approach them at booking the private lessons. This is a process that has taken me 2 years to establish, but now that I'm there, it does make a huge difference in our students. Again, this is one reason why Jason David Frank said that our students are very teachable. One reason why they're teachable is because I have high standards for each student's growth and development, and I want them to get better every class, and they know that. So if they are not improving or showing skill development in a particular topic, they will approach me and find ways to help improve that particular skill. So that's, again, that's an important teaching factor. Going on to factor number 7, and I threw this in mainly because a lot of people are still believe the concept that you have to end class with a mat chat. And they say you should end the class with a mat chat because that's when moms and dads are picking up their kids. And if they hear you talking about character lessons, then it's going to establish value in their eyes and they're going to keep their child in your martial arts for a longer time. Or they also do mat chats because that's the last thing that sticks in their head. Totally understandable where this approach comes from. But here's what I've noticed. First and foremost, a lot of our parents stay, so they do see the value. Secondly, I feel that if a child doesn't want to take class at my school anymore, no matter if the parent sees value, the parent's going to let them quit. Especially in my area, in the St. Petersburg community, it's a little more laid back. The children are a little more, I don't want to say spoiled, but they tend to get what they want, regardless of what it is. So if they don't want to take class, even if mom and dad do see value, it's going to be a challenge for the parent to keep the child in there day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. So having the mat chats at the end so the parent sees value, not very important to me. also having a match at the end of the class because that's the last thing that sticks in the child's head, to me, it may be the last thing that sticks in their head, and it may not. Remember, children reach attention thresholds. And 9 and under, usually attention threshold is approximately a half hour. So in that last half hour, if you're doing a match chat and they are already overloaded with information from the drills and everything that you've done during class, they may not remember what you taught in the match chat at the end of class. That's why I do my match chats right after calisthenics, and then I also revert back to the match chats after we do the drills to review. But I end class with a high-energy fun game each and every class. Now, there have been occasions where I didn't get to end with a high-energy game because we were either running out of time or because the kids were out of control that particular day, and I had to give them several warnings. That does happen. But 9 times out of 10, we're going to end with a high-energy game. And here's why I do it. Number one, it gives them something to look forward to as they try really hard in the drills. I am saying, oh, you guys did such a good job on this drill. I'm going to give you an extra minute of dodgeball at the end of class. They love it. They think that that's exciting. Number two, when we play dodgeball or a high-energy game, which usually ends up being dodgeball at the end of each class, they're excited. They're on cloud nine. They have a high abundance of energy. They're sweating. They're laughing. They're giggling. So when I line them up and I bow them out, the energy is still there, and the parents see their smiles and see them sweating. And to me, I think that that is even more valuable than sitting them down and doing a match chat. Plus, it's the last thing that does stick in their head. It doesn't really take a lot of attention to, like match chats do, because match chats you have to not only pay attention, but maybe try to remember what we talked about. But dodgeball is just all about energy and social interaction. So it does stick in their head, and they do remember that. And that's the last thing that sticks in their head before they walk out the door, and they can't wait to come back. So I think if you end the class with a fun, high-energy drill, you're going to start to see a lot more motivation from your students. And honestly, I think that it will have a significant difference on your bottom line. So when we schedule our classes, it's kind of funny. You know, for example, our 5- and 6-year-old class, the curriculum part is covered within 30 minutes. But we have a 15-minute gap between each class. And the reason why is because I find myself more and more playing games a little bit longer at the end of class and also spending a lot more time talking with the parents and students in between the classes. So I don't mind adding on an extra 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 minutes of dodgeball at the end of the class because I've got plenty of time before the next class actually starts. So, and again, of course, I highly recommend if you are playing dodgeball that you play too. Maybe not every single game, but as much as you possibly can because it does make a difference. We have several different dodgeball games that we play with our students. Either team dodgeball, which we split the students up into 2 teams and they compete against each other. We have instructor dodgeball, which is me and Mr. Carlos and whoever assistants are for the day play against the students. Or we have David and Goliath dodgeball, which on each particular team we have a secret team captain, and if the other team hits that secret team captain, then the team wins. So those are the 3 games. The students love it. It's high energy. It's a lot of fun. If you'd like to know a little bit more about our dodgeball process, of course, you can book a 20-minute consultation, and I can spend the whole 20 minutes talking to you about how to play dodgeball. I'm serious. I tell you, if martial arts ever went out of style or ever became illegal or something, which, of course, it never would, but, you know, if martial arts never really panned out for me here in this particular community, I would open up a dodgeball school, and I think it would be just as successful because the kids love it so much. So end that class with a fun team game or a fun game. I guarantee it'll make a significant difference in your students' energy and motivation. You can use it to motivate the students during class. And, of course, again, it's the last thing that sticks in the kids' heads when they leave. And that's very important because you want them excited and happy. And, of course, kids love to play. So that's all part of the whole martial arts environment. So really quickly, the 7 teaching factors, again, these factors are very, very important to me. They've made a big difference in my teaching. Our students are, like I said, they're very teachable. They're highly disciplined, and they're highly motivated. And it's not because I magically was able to handpick the best students in the St. Pete community, which I do think that we do have some of the best students. But it's because of how we approach those students that makes a big difference. So, number one, spend a great deal of time analyzing your teaching efforts so that you can hone in on your skills. If a drill is dull, maybe because of your teaching approach, then don't teach it anymore. Teach a different drill. Now, there are some drills that Carlos teaches far better than I do, so I have Carlos run those particular drills. And there are other drills that I teach, them far better than Carlos does, just because of personalities. So hone in on your skills and find the drills that you feel you are best able to deliver to your students, and utilize those drills each and every class. That's very, very important. And not just for you, again, like I said, for your staff. If your staff is not consistently trying to hone in on his or her skills and get better, then they're probably not an ideal instructor. One thing I really like about Carlos is after a class, he'll come over and say, how was that class? What did you think about that drill? Did you like how I said that? Or, you know, this one drill, I don't understand. Some of the kids didn't do very well on it. I thought they would do a lot better. And I like that about Carlos, because when he says that, I'm able to say, yeah, that drill that you just did was highly funny. I'm definitely going to use some of the words that you used in that drill. And, yes, this drill, they did have a hard time, and here's the reason why. Because they need a little bit more encouragement, a little bit more support, maybe a little bit more of the laws of intrinsic motivation when you get them to do those high reps. Instead of just telling them to do 100 push-ups, say 25 push-ups is the minimum, 50 if you want to be a black belt, 75 if you want to be a master, and 100 if you want to make me proud. You know, different things like that. And that's why Carlos is becoming a great instructor right now, because he's honing in on his skills. Again, factor number two, I choose to teach the way I do because I taught a different way for several years, and eventually I became burnt out. You can tell right now I'm very excited because, like I said, I'm very passionate about my teaching. If there's things that you do when you're a teacher or when you're instructing that make you feel very uncomfortable and make you feel burnt out, then don't do them anymore. You know, like I said, as an example, giving my students time out or giving them push-ups and yelling at one particular student, embarrassing them in front of other parents and kids, really was the teaching approaches that burnt me out. So I took those out. I don't want to be the mean, embarrassing, bad guy. I think that teachers do that in school. I think that coaches do that in other sports. Not all teachers and not all coaches and not all parents, but I think enough of them do that in a child's life that I want to be the one who's always giving positive reinforcement and not doing anything that could be retroactive for them. Factor number three, really quickly, just for review, begin your daily teaching regimen with goals for your curriculum. Try not to wing it every day. You know, once in a while here and there, if you're really busy, it's understandable. But eventually, if you have goals for each and every class planner and you prepare your class planners each and every day, eventually it's going to be a must for you, just like it is for me. I would never, ever jump on the floor without a planner, without a goal for the day anymore. At first, it was kind of half and half, and now I can't even imagine teaching without having a plan because I see the value of having a plan each particular day. Factor number four, learn to master patience while maintaining energy and establishing discipline. Learn to let the little things go, like when they're lining up or when they're sitting down after a quick break. Let those little bitty things go. Be very patient with them, but at the same time, bring them to a disciplined manner and do it in a way that's high energy, like tricking them or challenging them to line up within 5 seconds using stopwatches. If you do not own a stopwatch and you don't have a stopwatch in your school, I highly suggest you get one. I'm all about using my stopwatch each and every class. I'll time them. I'll challenge them. I think the stopwatch is a big, big energy booster for me and also for my students. Factor number four, I establish a personal relationship with each and every student, so I suggest that you establish a personal relationship with each and every student. Not just a personal relationship in the sense that you know their name and you know their parents' name. I know what grade each one of my students are in. I know which school they go to, pretty much know everybody's favorite color, their favorite movie. I know what their strengths are. I know what their weak spots are, and it's all because that's my role as an instructor. Each and every day, I'm fully committed to learn those things. It's part of my daily routine. It's part of my job. Going on to factor number six, have high standards for each and every student's growth and development. We all have those students, or we've all been there, where there are students who are significantly weak in a lot of areas, whether it's their physical abilities, their intellectual abilities, their social abilities, or even their emotional abilities. And if you just kind of ignore them and hope that they get better, well, maybe they will, but maybe they won't. And do you really want to take that chance with a student? Each and every one of my students, I have high standards for. And each and every one of my students, I pay attention to. I pay attention to their weak spots, and I fix their weak spots as often as I possibly can. And you notice I said as often as I possibly can. because, you know, I understand as an instructor, you're not going to be able to help every single student every single day, but you can do your best. And if you do your best, eventually each and every student will get better each and every day. And that's the whole process of becoming a great instructor. Have high standards for your students and focus on that as part of your daily job as an instructor. And then, of course, factor number 7, which I always just throw in there because I think that this time around, I really got it down pat. End that class with something high energy so that they're laughing, they're smiling, they're sweating, and they can't wait to come back. As a matter of fact, one thing that I really like about my students is when I have to line them up, they're like, oh, can we play one more time, or is class already done? I love that about my students. We just had a parents' night on Friday night, and I had at least 6 kids who cried when their parents showed up because all they wanted to do was keep playing. To me, that shows me that the children really love martial arts, and it's a great social environment. And as long as my children are laughing and smiling, I know that my school is going to be very successful. So those are the 7 teaching factors that have improved my teaching ability. Again, you could be an instructor on the floor who's out there just counting or just following your scripts, and you're probably not going to do too bad because martial arts is such a great sport. But if you can master the art of teaching by applying these teaching factors, I guarantee you that not only will you have a higher retention rate and your bottom line will be significant and your students will get better, but you personally – as an instructor, will love teaching each and every day. I have to honestly say, I love my job. I'm very happy and content with where I am right now in my career and with my school. And I couldn't say that 6 years ago when I turned 25. I wasn't very happy with teaching, and I didn't really like it, and I tried to pawn it off on other instructors. And now there's not a day that goes by where I don't enjoy teaching. And if there is a day that I'm not here because I'm doing a seminar or I'm stuck on a deadline, I'm not the same person. When I teach, I feel like I'm a better person and a happier person. And again, keep in mind, this is coming from somebody who has 3 jobs. I own Schumann Concepts. I'm a senior consultant for Member Solutions. I run On the Mat Martial Arts. I even have an EDGE program where I have some clients that I work with on a one-on-one basis. And I'm starting a 5th company that's going to launch August 1st, which is going to be an all-children's martial arts company. In order for me to balance out these 5 jobs, I think one thing that helps keep me focused is teaching. That's the only thing that really balances me out. And a lot of people ask me, Melody, how do you do it, or how do you stay motivated each and every day? And, you know, honestly, the thing that motivates me the most is when I jump out on that floor. So if I can share with you some of my passion, some of the things that help me enjoy my life and become a better person, I think this is the report that has done it. So hopefully each and every one of you will find this report very resourceful and hopefully it'll motivate you today, tomorrow, and for the months to come, not just you, but, of course, your staff. So if you liked what you heard on the report today, don't forget that this teleconference is being recorded and it will be available to you shortly. I highly recommend that you download it and you let your staff listen to it because I think it will make a big difference. Thank you guys very much for participating in this month's teleconference. Again, if you do have any additional questions that maybe don't pop up right now but maybe pop up later on today or later on this week, then don't forget to contact your Member Solutions representative and book a 20-minute consultation. I'd be more than happy to just spend a little bit of time brainstorming some ideas on how to improve your teaching skills, or maybe not necessarily your teaching skills, but your staff teaching skills for that matter. But one thing that I do want to point out about this report, and of course every teleconference and every report that you read, whether it's through Member Solutions or through another consulting outlet, just knowing this information, as we all know, doesn't mean that it's going to directly affect the success of your school or the growth of your school. The application is what makes a big difference, and not just a 10% application or even an 80% application. It's got to be 100% application. There are many times that I do network with other school owners, and they try it out, and then they forget about it. or they try it out and they don't get the results immediately like they want, so then they just quickly abandon it. It's those schools that try it out. If they don't get what they need out of it right away, they contact me, or they keep trying it over and over again until they master it. And that goes for everything, not just the seven factors of improving teaching. It includes price increases. It includes mandatory attendance policies, setting up really good guerrilla marketing campaigns. Whatever you start, it's the follow-through and accomplishment that makes your school successful. So keep that in mind. I hope everybody found this report very resourceful, and I hope everybody has a wonderful month. Thank you guys very much for listening in on today's Member Solutions teleconference.